Welcome to issue 8 of Attention, talking about my generation. I'm Joseph Bedford, director of the Architecture Exchange, and I'm the founding editor of Attention. In this issue, you'll hear a series of 10 montages that are going to bring together 33 mid-career academic architects who represent something of a new movement, a new grouping, or a new generation in the United States. You can find the full list of the architects featured in the issue in the description of the podcast player, or if you look on the Architecture Exchange website under Attention issue number 8. I began this project because I was interested in the new visibility given to this group of architects in the United States by a series of influential workshops, conferences, exhibitions, and publications, all of which took place between 2013 and 2018. I requested interviews from many of those who appeared and reappeared again and again in these various events. The events include the Possible Mediums workshop at OSU in 2013, the treatise series curated by Jimenez Lai in 2015, the Make New History Biennale, and also Michael Meredith's Indifference Again article, both in 2017, and the Inscription Show at Harvard, the Becoming Digital Conference at Michigan, and the 44 Low-Resolution Houses exhibition at Princeton, all in 2018. From these various events, it became clear that there was a new body of work emerging from a new generation of architects. Because these workshops, conferences, and exhibitions were curated by people in this group, they constitute a self-conscious effort to foreground their own work as a group. Yet, as you'll hear, many of them have ambivalent feelings about to what degree they are a group, whether they have anything in common, or whether they hold a common position. You'll hear a certain amount of doubt in their voices about what they're all doing and what it all means. Nobody wants to speak on anyone else's behalf, and no one wants to make bold arguments outlining what their individual or collective project is. Yet it's clear to me that there is a common phenomena here, not just because they have grouped themselves, but because the work itself really does share a lot of common traits. They tend to emphasize the differences, of course, between each of them. But it's possible to describe a surprisingly coherent set of characteristics within their work. Indeed, when asked, they're surprisingly eloquent themselves about what they have in common, even while denying that they have anything in common. Many have been interested in forms of composition that are discreet, casual, informal, and dumb. For example, they tend to allow parts of buildings to misalign from other parts, to flop, to sag, and to slip. Many of them share an affinity for shape-making, and they tend to emphasize profiles that are somewhat iconic or graphically legible, though many like to make these shapes ambiguous so that they suggest multiple references at the same time. Many are focused on evoking architectural references, including domestic references to things like pitched roofs, chimneys, housey houses, and windowy windows, or archaic references to things like dolmens and ziggurats. In this way, they make architecture into a thing that is both itself and about itself. The predominance of the reference in their work might appear as reminiscent of postmodern historicism, but it's not intended as part of a desire to return to origins. Rather, references are folded into practices that are freely using highly artificial means of representation, including digital media of all kinds and low-tech analog media such as paper, scissors, cardboard, plastic, or stick figures. This makes the reference simply one facet of a larger project. Working with such references and attempting to interpret them in knowing ways has the effect of opening a world of creative possibilities and meanings. Yet, given that the references are treated in a vague and ambiguous manner, as faint echoes from past worlds, those meanings and interpretations are also vague and ambiguous. They're suggestive and loose, rather than sharp and clear. They don't function to help you understand the meaning of what is being referenced in any profound way. The familiarity of many of these references to a wider public also helps them to see their work as readily understandable by more people. while the subtle nature of their interpretation, involving techniques of estrangement and defamiliarization, continues to ensure that their work is seen as new, experimental, and sophisticated to other similarly educated architects within the discipline. Many of them are intensely concerned with the way architecture is made, and making something themselves with what they can purchase at Home Depot, whether this is at the scale of an installation in a gallery, a pavilion, or a small house. Yet again, if they work with familiar domestic construction, such as the 2x4 balloon frame that's ubiquitous across the United States, what they build is not at all familiar. They often exaggerate, and I would say also mannerize, the forms and techniques that they adopt. They comment on them in clever ways, sometimes turning their projects into conceptual art, by doing such things as reading the dashed center lines on a drawing set as the gap in the concrete pour of a floor. There is, in general, a tendency throughout their projects to move back and forth between what is real and what is represented, in such a way to make their work appear both real and representational, both popular and academic. For some, working with how things are made is also about soliciting entropy and new forms of openness from the behavior of materials such as piles of rocks and aggregate. For others, working with materials is about producing new qualities that are powerfully affective, though not always pleasant. Another kind of referentiality in their work is achieved through the ability of materials and forms to connote feelings and moods, sometimes creepy, sometimes horrifying, sometimes uncanny, sometimes cute and erotic. This is why many of them have been interested in buildings that are animal-like or creaturely. So, taken as a whole, it's clear that the work of this generation is certainly not like that which is being built by most architectural offices in the United States today. There is, of course, a spectrum here. There are degrees of strangeness in the work, but on aggregate, this work tends to oppose architectural expressions of high performance, high technology, the instrumental, the efficient, and the functional. It tends to foreground a new informality, a new loose approach to references and meanings in contrast to these things. So why these 33 people in particular? Well, to be honest, it's somewhat random. I could have interviewed many more people. I requested interviews from quite a lot of people that never worked out, and I had many others on my long list, all architects who would also see themselves as part of this larger group, who were in the same shows, and who studied and now work in some of the same schools. So these 33 people are a small sampling, which is simply the result of the limited time and energy I had available to do the interviews and to edit them. The project would have been unmanageable had I tried to include everyone. Interviewing 33 people already made the project pretty monumental in scale. Yet I'm confident, given the common themes throughout the interviews, that this is a representative sample of the views held by this generation of US academic architects. The interviews were conducted over Zoom between September 2021 and July 2022. Tim Cox edited these episodes during 2024 and 2025, and he's done a great job at weaving together a collective virtual conversation, one that raises important questions and issues faced by this generation. Tim created 10 60 to 90 minute montages that cover the main topics and questions that I asked everybody. So let me share with you these questions so you know what everyone was responding to. I asked them, what do you feel is your generational position? What is your genealogy? That is, which teachers, schools, debates, exhibitions, publications, fellowships, and conferences were formative for you? How would you describe the common approach, attitude, or aesthetics of your generation? What is the political meaning of your aesthetic and approach, and that of your generation? What is the relationship of your work to the digital? What is the relationship of your generation to ideology? What is the relationship of your generation to theory? Or, to put this in slightly more pointed terms, Why does nobody in your generation want to write an architectural theory book like Complexity and Contradiction anymore? What do you think of the idea of the discipline? How does your generation deal with the tension that exists between academia and the profession? And how do you feel about your ability to practice architecture? Tim organized the issue around these 10 questions. In it, you can hear the story of this generation unfold as we talk about their historical situation, their education, their work, their politics, their relationship to theory, ideology, the discipline, and academia. This issue will, hopefully, cast new light on this generation, which is also my generation. It's a generation which has been emerging from a particular set of top-ranked schools in the United States in the last decade and a half, which is not necessarily widely understood yet. The body of work is probably quite well known to people visually at least, but what might be more obscure are the ideas and attitudes and beliefs held by those creating this work. My motivation in doing these interviews lay in the fact that I've been interested in recent years in the fate and future of architectural theory, or of understanding architecture as a discipline. This group of architects conveniently group themselves, as I've said, but it was also evident to me that this group of architects are identifiable as a group by the fact that they are inheritors, we might say, of a certain disciplinary space for understanding architecture that was created in these top-ranked schools in the United States over the last half century. These architects are all quite lucid, in fact, about the influential set of schools in which they form their approach, even if they reject the concept of genealogy and generation. And even if they have largely adopted a pluralist rhetoric, which makes it difficult for them to embrace the deeper significance of this inheritance, it is there. In my view, the work of cultivating a discipline requires more than simply advancing an aesthetic or formal project. By the discipline here, I mean, to name, a shared knowledge that helps us mediate and reflect upon the evolution of architectural forms and aesthetics. I would argue that the discipline is what actually made it possible for the new informal aesthetics that this group of architects has developed to come about. Without the ideas and arguments that were advanced, debated, criticized, and shared by generations in the past, and which contributed to the making of a disciplinary space, the work that this generation has created would simply not exist. And ultimately, it is the discipline that will enable us to judge the significance of this work. It will enable us to understand its meaning and to embed it in a lasting cultural history of which it deserves to be a part. Some might disagree with me here and conjecture that the formal and aesthetic development of architecture no longer needs the work of theory, ideological debate, and disciplinary self-understanding. Or, even if it needed it, they might say that the media technical changes of the internet and the moral transformations of society would simply make it impossible. This is a complex question, worth debating, and it is one which I hope you will think about as you listen through these episodes. I would encourage you to debate the topic with your friends, your colleagues, and your students. I will hold off saying too much about what I think of this generation's situation here because I'd like you to simply hear from them and come to your own conclusions. So I will save what I have for later. Happy listening, and I hope you enjoy issue 8 of Attention, talking about my generation.
It's much more harder.